If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, I'm Jenny Hagel.
And I'm Amber Ruffin.
And we went down to the South by Southwest Festival and we did a show called
Late Night Trash Can.
And here it is.
Hi, everybody. Good afternoon. How y'all doing? I'm Eric Lederman, producer at Late Night with Seth Meyers. I want to introduce two of the greatest people on the planet and the funniest. It is Jenny Hagel and Amber Ruffin. Come on out, guys.
Oh, microphones. Whoa.
Hi, guys. Welcome.
Everybody,
hi.
Welcome to this.
Thank you for coming to Late Night Trash Can. I'm Jenny Hagel.
My name is Amber Ruffin.
And as Eric said, we're both writers and performers on Late Night with Seth Meyers, which is the most fun job I've ever had.
True. Yeah.
The reason we brought you here today is
because we are failures.
As the name implies, we brought you here today because we want to read you a bunch of things from our trash can. Writing for a late night show involves so much writing, just writing and writing and writing. And writing for a late night show, when people ask me about it, I always describe it like being in a batting cage. Like you just take a million swings. You just take swings all
Except,
the time.
And like some of those swings are like normal, like ha, but then some are like, and it, like if you could take a swing that embarrassed you to your soul, then yes, then that's
it's like being in a batting cage, but you're only mediocre at baseball.
Yes, there it is.
So yeah, right. So a lot of the swings are misses, and then every once in a while something connects, right? And so but in order to get those connections, you have to take so many swings that don't connect. So we both have a ton of material that we wrote that did not make it on the show. And we thought we would share some of it with you today and talk to you about failure and what our relationship with failure and what it means to us.
Is it okay with you if we do that? Yeah. Oh, okay, all right. Great. Okay.
Are you ready to hear some garbage?
All right, I want us all on the same page. These things have been rejected. Several people have listened to them and have thought, no.
Other adults have looked us in the eye and said, this is a bad idea.
There's no way this is getting on television.
And we said, okay, we hear you. Let's get on a plane to Texas and read them out loud there.
Great.
So that's what we're going to do today. We're going to go through a bunch of garbage and read it to you guys. And then we're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about, like I said, our relationship with failure. I feel like you and I have probably...
It's a close relationship.
It is a close relationship. I feel like you and I, though, have maybe the healthiest relationship with failure of any two people I know. I think we...
Yeah. I'm hard to embarrass.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll go out there and have a bad time. I don't care. I feel like once you do... I used to work at a theater called Boom Chicago in Amsterdam. And once you have 300 people booing you in a language you don't speak, friggin' everything else is fine. Yeah.
One thing that that we both agree on, I think, is that the more you fail, the less it matters.
Yes.
The more you put yourself out there, if you put yourself out there once a year, then there's so much weight on that one risk you take, mm-hmm. and you are living and dying by it. But if you take a million risks all the time, each one of them matters less, and then each failure just counts, it's a smaller percentage of the pie, and so then it doesn't chip away at you as much, and then the successes are great, and the failures are like, oh well, I'll try again tomorrow.
And this isn't the part of this show for this, but it also, it hurts less when you are in a room with 13 other people failing just as hard, just as often. You know, it burns less, and I wish I didn't have to wait until now to realize that. But you should just know everyone is failing all the time.
Yeah.
And eventually it will feel like nothing.
Yeah. Because I think sometimes I'll like
failing when will become second nature.
Yeah. This is like a motivational speech, but the opposite.
You suck, embrace it.
No, because I feel like when I was a kid, I used to watch so much comedy on television. And if you watch a comedian's 1 hour special, you're seeing 1 hour of their best jokes that they took their whole adult life to collect. But what you're not seeing is all the ones that they crossed out, they scribbled in a margin on a notebook, and they did at some like open mic night that was terrible. You're not seeing all the rough drafts. You're not seeing all the things that they thought were a great idea and ended up being a terrible idea. Like, you're not seeing every swing that didn't connect. And so you think that other people only have hits, and you're like, what's wrong with me that I have all these misses? And you're right. Once you get onto a late night staff and you watch other people pitch a mixture of failures and successes, you're like, oh, we're all just doing our best.
I tell you what, once Seth Meyers looks you in the eye and pitches you a bad joke, woo! You can't tell me nothing anymore.
You're like, we're all a failure sometimes.
Like, you thought that was a good idea? Well, I guess we will be doing my Cookie Monster sketch.
So should we dive in?
Yay!
All right, without further ado.
Wait, you guys, can you see back there? Can y'all see us?
If we sit down, can you see us? Okay. Only?
Wait.
What? Do we have phone books back there that we're going to sit on? Oh, no.
Is that bad?
I don't know.
Is this going to tip over? Oh, there's a thing back here. It's fine.
The show's about to be called Late Night Concussion.
This is my concussion.
Oh, if you're here.
Do you feel safe?
I feel fine. I have a very big butt, so I have a lot of surface area.
For people
who are only hearing this in a podcast experience, we're now sitting on the back of a couch like two saucy people in a sitcom.
And for people who don't know us very well, I always wish for Jenny's big butt. And Jenny doesn't like her big butt.
I wish I had Amber's small butt. So Amber and I actually...
Oh, don't say small butt.
Amber and I have been friends for over 10 years. And we met doing comedy at Second City, sketch comedy, a million years ago. And one time when we were babies, we wrote a sketch about a song about how we wanted to trade butts. We wrote a song. We put it to music. There were lyrics. And we tried it out. And guess what? It was rejected. I'll never forget it.
That's excellent.
I think it every time I look at your butt. great. So to get started, never mind about the sketches we wrote in our 20s. Here's a sketch. We're going to start out today with a sketch that I wrote during the 2016 primary. I pitched this just a couple months after I started working at Late Night. And this is one of my first big rejections. I brought this into work and I was like, ooh, I am hot. Get ready for this sketch, everybody. And then it got rejected.
Great.
Great. So this is just, in this sketch, it just starts out with Seth sitting at his desk.
So when you hear my voice, I want you to imagine Seth Mildred Myers.
Yeah. So Amber's going to read the part of Seth, and I'm going to read the part of myself.
Time magazine published an article this week claiming that when media outlets write about Hillary Clinton, they often use biased language. Here to talk about what that means, please welcome one of our writers, Jenny Hagel.
And then I come out and I sit on the couch next to him.
Hi, Jenny.
Hey, Seth.
So what exactly is biased language?
Great question. Biased language happens when people use terms to describe a woman that they would never use to describe a man in the same situation. For example, when a male candidate raises his voice during a debate, the media describes him as passionate. But if Hillary Clinton does the same thing, people describe her as shrill. It has to stop. In fact, everybody say it with me. It has to stop. Let's go. Right, again. It has to stop. Thank you.
Oh, I see. Like, if a man wears pants, he looks professional. But if a woman wears pants, she's too buttoned up.
Exactly. If a man is running in the park, people say he's fit. But if I'm running in the park, people say, come back here. That's my wallet. It has to stop.
Okay, now, I don't think that that's it exactly.
Sure it is. If a man sits with his legs open, people say he's tough. But if I sit with my legs open, people say, please put on pants. This is a funeral. It has to stop.
Okay, that definitely has to stop. But I think in general, we're on the same page.
Of course we are. If a man has a firm handshake, people say he's strong. But if I train toddlers to fight each other, I'm violating my lease. It has to stop. Thank you. I've been reprimanded for so many things just because I'm a woman. Pickpocketing, vandalizing a Quaker meeting house, urinating on an endangered species.
Jenny, you didn't get in trouble for those things because you're a woman. You got in trouble because they're against the law.
Oh, so I guess it's against the law for me to put my pap smear on Snapchat?
Yes. What would you even call that?
Papchat.
Never mind. Look, what can we do to make sure we're choosing a candidate for the right reasons and not because of gender bias?
Great question. You can focus on what the candidate is saying instead of how they look or sound.
Wow, that's a great idea.
Yeah, or you can just vote for a woman. Men are way too shrill.
Jenny Hagel, everybody!
It has to stop!
Woo! And that's what they call a rejected sketch. Jenny, do you have a philosophy about failure?
Thank you for asking, Amber.
You're welcome.
I do, and it's very corny, but I really, really do swear by it. My philosophy about failure is when you pitch, you win. And I say this a lot at the office.
She says it all the time.
I say it all the time because I'm a cornball. Thank you. There's a thumbs up in the back, and I appreciate it. When you pitch, you win. I think that one of the scariest, most vulnerable things you can do is to sit in a group, in a room full of people and say, hey, guys, I think this is a funny idea. Because it's scary. What if everybody else doesn't think it's funny? And that does happen. And so I think, man, if you are able to even get to the point where you're in a room of comedy writers and you've gotten the job and it's part of your job, people are grown-up people who are paying you come to you and say, hey, Jenny, what's your idea? What's your pitch? And you are confident enough to stand up in a room full of people and say, I think this is a funny idea, then you have already won. And not to be corny, but especially if you're a woman, especially if you're a person of color, if you've even gotten that far, and then you can stand up in a room full of people and be like, how about this idea? Man, that is the battle. So I feel like, and as long as you just keep taking those swings, like, you pitching is the victory, and then eventually one of those things will land. So I think that's the toughest, bravest part, is having to do the pitch. So I really strongly believe that if you pitch, you win. I'm not embarrassed of many of my pitches, even though many of them have been rejected. I'm really hard-pressed to be embarrassed by any of them because I feel like some of the ones that failed the hardest, I was taking the biggest, weirdest swing. You know, I was at least trying to do something different. And I feel like if you sit on your pitches or you swallow them or you're too nervous to say them, then that's not a victory. If you are brave enough to be like, look, this might be crazy, but what if we hired 12 llamas? And they each represented one of the original colonies. And then, like you know what I mean? Like, if you have the courage, there were 13, I know.
One of the original colonies.
If you have the courage to make that weird pitch, then you have already won.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's how I feel about it.
And that's Jenny's philosophy.
That's my philosophy. Hashtag when you pitch, you win.
That's not a hashtag. Please don't use that.
Amber, do you want to read something like that?
Yes.
All right.
Okay, this is a sketch that I wrote a million years ago when the police kept shooting people.
Is that
kidding.
A problem? It's over?
It's over now. Everyone go run around and do whatever you want. No, but that's that, and this is this sketch about that.
And in this sketch, I'll be reading the part of Seth, so when you hear my voice, imagine it's Seth, but I know that's going to be tricky because my voice is 18 octaves lower. Because I have, not because he has a bad voice, but because I have a freakishly low voice. So you just have to dial up my voice a little in your head. All right, here we go. The New Jersey State Assembly on Thursday passed a bill that would require schools to teach children how to interact with police officers. Here to talk more about it is New Jersey teacher Tina Woodworth.
Hello, Seth.
Tina, hi. What do you think about this bill?
I think it's great.
You do?
Yes. We believe the number of tense interactions with police can greatly be reduced by this bill.
Wow. Okay. What can you tell us about it?
If the bill passes, schools will work with the police department to give kindergarten through 12th grade students the tools they need to interact with police officers when they're adults.
Don't you think that puts the onus on the child when the police officer should be trained to deal with people?
Seth, 8 out of 10 people being stopped by cops have no idea what to do.
I'm sorry, no idea what to do?
Oh, yes. Many adults see officers, grab them, and try to catch them all like Pokemon. Or they'll try to sit on the officer's lap and tell them what they want for Christmas.
They do?
They see an officer and have no clue how to behave. In many cases, people rub the belly of the officer and make a wish, oftentimes wishing for more wishes.
That's ridiculous.
It is. Everyone knows you can't wish for more wishes. People see the uniform and have no clue what it means. There have been so many times an officer came to someone's house to make an arrest, only to have the suspect try to buy cookies from them. People are very confused.
People shouldn't be confused. The police tell you exactly what they want you to do.
But they don't say Simon Says, and that's where people get tripped up. People find officers very confusing. They have no idea how to talk to law enforcement. For example, you should state your name and what your intentions are. You should not tag the officer and say, "You're it," and run away. You should also never step on an officer's feet, hold on to him, and insist that he dance with you like a dad dances with his tiny daughter.
An officer would never instruct you to do that.
What do any of their instructions even mean, Seth? Get down or get down. Put your hands up or put your hands up in the air and wave them like you just don't care. It's anyone's guess.
All right, that makes no sense. You should approach an officer calmly and politely and do what they ask you to do.
Oh, really? Because based on the number of people who were shot by police while following orders, it hasn't been working out too well. And if people don't feel like it's up to the cops to learn how to do a better job policing their communities, then it's up to us to try to not get killed.
I see.
And that way is to approach the officer butt first so they can smell you like a dog.
All right, that's enough. Tina Woodworth, everybody.
Yay! Now, some of these sketches, you don't know why they didn't make it, but others, it's pretty clear.
Can I ask you a question about failure?
Okay.
Okay. What is one thing that you wish you could tell your younger self about failure?
Ugh.
Like if you could get in a time machine and go back to like...
That she would be really good at it? I don't know. My thing about it is that you are not good until you have failed completely. Like until 300 people hate your guts. Like it truly doesn't feel like, you know how when you like someone and you know they like you, you act however you want. And like eventually, even if you're crazy, they'll be like, "Oh, well, I love her." That's what comedy is. Like eventually people will come around to you no matter what, even if it always started out terrible. Like comedy, if you're in love with it, it is in love with you and it will forgive you. No matter what, eventually. But it's just, you have to get all those failures out. You have to suck for a while.
I feel like you have to have that one big failure and then not die from it to see like that it can't kill you. Because I think until you have a really, truly 100% embarrassing failure, you think that, okay, I'm going to have one and then I'm going to die.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to have one and all my peers who also do comedy will see me have that failure and then I'll never be able to show my face again. And once you have one of those and you wake up the next day and you're not dead and you have a message from a friend being like, "Hey, will you come do my show?"
Yeah.
And you're like, "Oh."
Like, I cried in the bathroom for no reason.
Yeah. It's like in a superhero origin movie where they get shot and they're like, the bullet hole closes up and they're like, "Oh, I guess I'm invincible." Like, that doesn't mean that you're always going to be funny, but you're like, "Oh, I will not die from this."
No.
And in fact, you get better because you're like,
"Oh." And eventually you feel it making you a better comedian.
Yeah. Because you do it, it dies, and then you think, okay, why did that joke die? Can I move that word here? Can I cut this part of it? Or do I just need to throw it in the garbage and now I know why it died, so I won't write another one like that?
Yeah, when you start out as a comedian, it's buckshot, and then eventually it's buckshot.
Didn't know that was like a...
I'm from Omaha, Nebraska.
I mean, which everybody just figured out.
Sometimes when you hunt an animal, you use buckshot and it sprays a bunch of bullets. Sometimes you just use like a revolver.
Amber and I have been friends, as I said, for over a decade, and I've never heard her use a hunting metaphor. So
this I'm not saying I didn't have my own BB gun when I was five, and it was a pink handgun, but...
But you were saying that sometimes when you start out in comedy, it's buckshot.
So then eventually, what happens is you don't need all of those attempts, and you figure out, and it really becomes like laser focus, and you know exactly what to do, and you can zip into any audience and get them on your side.
You can read a room. You can,
but not until they've hated your guts. Yeah. I cannot stress that enough.
I think that's exactly right. So at late night, we tape every night at 6:30. We tape our show, but every afternoon at 4:15, we do a rehearsal in front of live human beings. Somebody goes to the NBC gift shop and grabs a bunch of tourists, somewhere between 30 and 40 tourists, and they bring them into our studio. And Seth reads monologue jokes to them, and if one of us is doing a sketch, we perform that sketch for them, and we use that as like a test audience to see like, hey, is this viable? Should we do this on the show? Or like, okay, this piece is viable, but this part doesn't work, and this part doesn't work. So it's a great dry run for us. Every once in a while, something in rehearsal goes so badly, we just decide to cut the whole thing. So I wrote a piece in March of last year. The White House tweeted a photo of their current class of interns, and they were like, look at our interns, we're so proud of them. And everybody's like, every single person in this photo is white, you dum-dums. And so there was like all this backlash online about the photo. And so I wrote a piece where I thought it'd be really fun to do like a bunch of burns on the photo. Like, you know, like your mama jokes, how you talk about your mama, so this or that. I thought it'd be really fun to do a piece where we burn them. It's called Interns So White. Like your interns are so white, blah, blah. So I wrote a piece for Seth. He did it in rehearsal, and we decided to do it in the show. And then right before the show, we decided to pull it. We're like, maybe not. We don't know if this is going to work. So the next day, our head writer came to me, and he said, hey, what if you did the piece? Because I'm Puerto Rican, and so he's like, you know, it might make more sense coming from someone who's not white to burn these people for being so white. And I said, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Now, I want to be clear that the piece had gone well for Seth in rehearsal the day before. And then I went to rehearsal and told all the same jokes that Seth Meyers told. And I brought video. We videotape all rehearsals. So I brought video to show you how it went when I did it. And I think if you watch my eyes closely, you can see the moment where I know it has died. So they're going to roll it for you on these screens. Take a look. This is called Interns So White.
The White House released a photo on Friday of its current class of interns posing with President Trump. Of the 91 interns pictured, only a handful were people of color. Here to comment is one of our writers, Jenny Hagel.
Thank you. Thanks, Seth. As a Hispanic woman in the American workforce, I had several thoughts when I saw this photo. Here they are in a segment called Interns So White. Hey, President Trump, your interns are so white, I just used one of them to cover up a typo. Your interns are so white, anytime more than 10 of them get together, it's technically St. Patrick's Day. Your interns are so white, they make the inside of a coconut look like the outside of a coconut. Your interns are so white, there's a polar bear hiding in that photo and you can't even see it. Your interns are so white, their favorite black actor is Zach Braff. Your interns are so white, if I squeeze them, I'd get Chardonnay. Your interns are so white, a giant uses them to clean his ears. I mean, you gotta think about that one for a second. Your interns are so white...
That was Seth laughing at how bad that's
going.
Your
interns are so white, the KKK is like, mix it up a little. Your interns are so white, their mailing address is floating in some cocoa. And finally, your interns are so white, they heard someone bit Beyonce and they Googled Beyonce. This has been Interns So White.
Give it up for Jenny Hagel, everyone.
The point where I pause and laugh, you can't tell because Seth's mic wasn't on, but where I laugh and look behind me is because Seth, I told one of them and it didn't go well, and it also hadn't gone well for him. And over my shoulder, he goes, you kept that one in? But I was so committed to that joke about the giant cleaning its ears. I thought, isn't that funny? They're all Q-tips, but it was only funny to me, it turns out.
And that's called a getting greedy. Hey, Jenny.
Yeah, Amber.
Will you tell me about a time, was there ever a time when you died on stage?
Oh,
so. Like physically, literally.
Not literally, but so many metaphorically. One of my favorite experiences with a joke dying on stage is I used to do, before I was a TV writer. I used to perform in Second City, and I spent a year performing with the Second City Detroit. Second City used to have, in addition to their Chicago theater, used to have a theater in Detroit, Michigan. And so I went out there and I wrote two original shows with them and performed them. And I had this one scene that I used to do, and it had a joke in it that killed every night. And it was the kind of joke that was just so solid that even if it was a crappy night and it was a quiet audience and they weren't really loving it, that joke always did well. To the point where we would, like, knew to hold for it. Like, I would say the line, and then we would wait a second because we were like, well, here comes the laughs. And then at some point, just, like, 2 months into the run of this show, I said the line, and then the other actress and I who were in the scene, we, like, held for a second, and there was nothing. And we were both like, oh! And then whoever's line was next, like, said their line, and kind of, like, awkward timing. Because we'd had the timing so smooth of, like, if they laugh about this long, then the next person talks. And we were like, oh, that was weird. That Ann Arbor joke didn't really hit. And then the next night, the same thing happened, and the next night, and it just never worked again. And we cannot figure out, we never were able to figure out why that joke just died after having succeeded. But the best part is, I'm sure this is not new terminology to anybody, but you know, like when a joke doesn't go well, you say it got crickets. So the scene was me and this other woman, and the third night that it died, one of the other guys in the cast was backstage, and he drew two very accurate cartoon drawings of, he drew two crickets, and then he stood backstage, and just in my eye line, so only I could see, but not the audience, after I said the line, he just held out this drawing of two crickets, and then he did that every night for the rest of the run, just to let me know that joke was dying. It was the best. I feel like all of my best memories of doing comedy with friends are always the times that we failed. Like, I never sit around with comedy friends and have beers and say, remember that joke that went super well? That's never part of our, like, fond reminiscing. It is always, God, remember the time that we went down in flames together and it, we were stronger for it and bonded over it?
Yeah, that's improvisers for you. Yeah. We love a good bad time.
Amber, you want to read something?
Okay.
Okay.
This is a sketch I wrote that we almost did, but it was super silly. I'll tell you the reason why we didn't do it after.
Okay. Okay. All right. And again, I will be playing Seth, but I'll be doing it like this.
It's funny because to our ears, you went like this and then you went like this.
Oh, wait, this is a true story. So I used to work at MTV and, I was working at a show that was hosted by a young lady, and I used to also produce her. There was a lot of voiceovers. I'd produce her voiceover segments, and so that means I had to be in the booth with her. She'd record a lot of, like, hey, welcome back to MTV, blah, blah, blah. And so she was new to the job, and it was my job to kind of coach her. And so at one point, I pushed that little button. She was in the booth, and I go, hey, I love what you're doing. Could you just do me a favor and do it a little bit more? And she's like, okay, thanks. And I go, could you do it a little bit more like this, like, hey, welcome back to MTV? And she goes, oh, okay. And then the engineer hit the button. She goes, hey, welcome back to MTV. And she wasn't trying to be funny. She just thought that I meant, and I was like, oh, right, that's what I sound like to people.
That's great.
All right. Hey, everybody, welcome back to Late Night. We have some very special guests on the show tonight.
Oh, jeez.
Amber, what's wrong?
Nothing.
Amber, if something's wrong, you can always talk to me. What's wrong?
It's just celebrity gossip.
You can talk to me about celebrity gossip. I love celebrity gossip.
It's black celebrity gossip.
You can talk to me about black celebrity gossip. Are you upset because the actress who played Rudy from The Cosby Show is reportedly pregnant and having relationship problems? Are you upset because Little Bow Wow recently told a reporter he's not black? Are you upset because reggae star Beanie Man contracted the Zika virus?
He did?
He did.
Ooh, but that's not it.
Wait a second. Are you upset because Mary J. Blige is getting a divorce?
Mm-hmm.
Aw. You know what, pal? Couples grow apart. It happens. But they made it 12 years, and for a celebrity marriage, that's pretty good.
I just love her so much, and I want her to be happy.
Oh, don't you see? She is. Because it feels so good when you let go of all the drama in your life.
No more pain.
No more pain.
No more drama.
No one's ever going to make her hurt again.
Hey, Seth?
Yeah?
Thanks.
Anytime. And hey, Empire's coming back soon, so maybe Mary J. will be on it again.
I hope so.
We all do, Amber. We all do. And Amber, since we're talking, there's some white stuff that's been bothering me. Can I talk to you?
No. And that's a sketch I wrote called Black Stuff. That sketch almost made it, which is a shock to all of us. But it did. You know, you never know why a sketch is going to get rejected. But this one, Seth had a real good point, and we got really close to doing it. And then he was like, "Does this kind of seem like I'm going, oh, are you sad about your little black stuff?" And I was like, yeah, I guess it does. Yeah, you're right. We can't do it. You're absolutely right. That's what you sound like. Yeah. And I'm sorry I made you say that stuff.
Amber, do you have a story about a time when you died real bad on stage?
Oh, dude. I used to work at a theater called Boom Chicago in Amsterdam, so I have a million stories about a million shows that have gone horribly wrong. I counted at one point, and I think I've done over 3,000 shows, so a good number of those were corporate shows. So when you step into a corporate show...
A corporate show is where comedy people get hired to like perform at some kind of a corporate event to make it less boring.
Who didn't know that? It's okay if you didn't know that. I'm sorry I said that.
I'm sorry if I just comedy-splained to you. I apologize. I just want everybody to be able to come along for the ride on the story.
One of the shows we did was for MTV, but in Holland, in Amsterdam. And one of the guests was... So our theater was filled with people. And one of the guests on stage was a bunch of people having a debate. And one of the people there was Jesse Jackson. So we convinced MTV, not we, me, the people who own Boom Chicago, convinced MTV to let us do an improv show after they had a debate that they filmed with Jesse Jackson. Now that is a bad idea. So we do this show, and we know it's going to be terrible because the debate stops and everyone starts talking because they want to talk about what they just saw. So our director goes, and I'm not kidding, he goes, you know how Jesse Jackson has that quote, I am, and everyone goes, I am, he goes, somebody. So our director goes, hey, everybody. And Jesse Jackson is walking out of the theater. We can still see him. Our director goes, hey, everybody, let me hear you say, I am. And everyone goes, I am. And he goes, ready to hear some good comedy. All right, can I have a... They hated us. They hated our guts. Why would you say that? That's horrible. Oh, it was bad, man. It was a terrible show. But, I mean, it was one of those shows. Some shows are so bad because no one cares that you're there. And this was bad in that way. Like, sometimes they're focused on you and they want you to die. But sometimes, you know, they don't even care that you're there. Yeah. This was the latter.
Yeah.
That's still a big, bad mess.
Fantastic.
Ready to shout out good suggestions.
Love it.
Oh, Lord.
So another thing that Amber and I do on the show is we both contribute monologue jokes periodically. And monologue jokes are just the batting cagiest of all comedy.
Now, Jenny really is on the monologue team, and I am not. It is a lot of work, and every time I have to do a little bit of it, I almost die.
Because that really is, of all the forms of comedy that we write, the one where you just have to keep taking swings. I would say the monologue team, every night, Seth's monologue probably has like 10 jokes in it. But to get those 10 jokes throughout the day, the monologue team turns in, I mean, I would say there's six of us. I'm about to do math, and it's going to be embarrassing, but there's six of us. We each turn in 50 a day. No, yeah, we each turn in 50 a day. There's six of us plus Bays. So I don't know.
God.
Yeah, so just to get, that's how many we do a day to get those, and then we choose 10 from that. And then the next day, we just get up and start again. So there are so many jokes to get to 10 good ones. So good news, you guys, we have a pile of ones that didn't make it.
So hold on to your butts.
We're going to take turns reading jokes that we wrote that did not make it onto the show.
Joke number one. A company called Posh Pushers has begun selling fashionable hospital gowns for women to wear while giving birth for a more stylish experience. Aw, there's a rip in it, said a woman about her vagina.
I should also point out, Amber and I have not shown each other the jokes that we pulled to read, so we're also hearing them for the first time. A woman in Indiana led authorities on a high-speed chase recently after shoplifting $445 worth of bras and panties. That's terrible, said women about the word panties.
Doritos is reportedly looking into launching a special women's chip that doesn't crunch as loudly, while Frito Lady is developing a corn chip that yells, "Shut up, bitch!"
I can't follow that.
A
lesbian couple recently joined a professional badminton league as doubles partners, and now you've heard it, the gayest sentence ever spoken.
In a new interview, the creator of the vodka brand, Grey Goose, said that one of the biggest vodka-related mistakes people make is storing liquor in the freezer, when we all know the proper way to store vodka is by soaking a tampon in it and putting it in your vagina. Try it, I don't know.
More than a dozen people were rescued yesterday after being trapped on a gondola ride at SeaWorld. "I also got trapped at SeaWorld," said a whale. Oh, too true.
A recent study shows that the number of black women who own guns is growing. Said cops, "Oops, that's not a gun, it's a phone."
I don't know why these jokes were rejected.
It's a mystery. It'll forever remain a mystery.
A new survey has found that female doctors make 28% less than their male peers. Female doctors, or as patients call them, nurse. Sorry, well, I guess we're having too many of our real feelings in these jokes.
Kendrick Lamar recently became the first rapper to win a Pulitzer Prize for music. "Can I hold it?" asked Kanye about Trump's dick.
The Rockefeller Center Christmas tree will be lit next week, and the Rockefeller Center menorah will be crunk. I want you guys to know that I submit that joke every year. At Christmas time, I've submitted it the last 3 years when they're about to light the Rockefeller Christmas tree, and it has never been chosen. So I feel like it's found its rightful home here.
You guys, your laughter chose that joke. I got a twofer.
Okay.
Though the Washington Post recently published an article about a little-known drink called black wine. Black wine, or as it's more commonly known, Sprite. The Washington Post recently published an article about a little-known type of wine called black wine. Hey, would you like some black wine?
Okay.
Someone got my hair wet.
Sometimes we get a setup, which is the first half of a joke, and then we try a bunch of different punchlines to see which works. And
so neither of those did.
All right. Police in Oklahoma are searching for a man who crashed his car into an adult novelty shop and allegedly stole hundreds of dollars worth of sex toys. Officials became suspicious when his wife reached orgasm. Men don't know how to do sex.
Oh!
That's the point of that joke. Oh, men don't know how to do sex.
Help them. Starbucks will close all of its stores on May 29th for racial bias training. "We'll teach them racial bias," said Denny's.
The nominees this year for Best Actress in a Motion Picture are 10 white women. 10 white women, or as it's technically known, a spin class.
Two black senators recently acknowledged possible interest in running for president in 2020. Said the senators, "No, I'm the other one."
A new documentary released yesterday follows a couple in England who decided to name their children Adolf Hitler and Aryan Nation. "Who's weird now?" said a kid in Brooklyn named Kale. That's real. I live in Brooklyn. It's very real.
That's very disgusting, and I hate it, and I hate the names of those children. I'm sorry. I very hate it. Would you like to hear the worst one I have? Air and Space magazine recently published an article about a historical event known as the Black Christmas Disaster. The Black Christmas Disaster, or better known as the time Target got rid of layaway.
Thank you. The aluminum foil brand Reynolds Wrap recently created a wearable snack-holding vest for Super Bowl parties. Said lesbians, "You had me at vest."
You see, lesbians love vests.
You see, guys.
You're welcome for those terrible jokes.
Thank you for tolerating them.
Feels very good. So thank you for letting us use you as guinea pigs. We have now moved on to the Q&A portion of the evening. Is it evening? What time is it?
Who knows? If you guys have Qs, we have As.
And A means ass, and Jenny's got all of it.
Yeah, but we would love to, if you guys have any questions about anything, we would love to field them. And but sincerely, thank you for listening to all of our garbage.
Yay!
Garbage.
Thank you so much for coming. So,
where are you?
I'm right here.
Oh, great. Okay. Thank you. Stand up so we can see your
okay.
face.
So it seems like you guys are, it's uncommon to see so many women as visible presences on the late night shows, which I think is great. I'm curious, is the writing staff also predominantly female, or how is it split? Or is it more diverse than other typical late night shows?
We're 5 women and 9 men.
10 men?
10 men?
Yeah.
We don't have no 15 writers. What?
9 or 10 men. We'll get back to you.
But yeah, we're pretty diverse, especially as far as late night goes.
Yeah, I think that we're a third women, which I think in any other field would not be would not seem like a big deal, but it's a very big deal in late night. Most shows I know have far fewer women or far fewer smaller percentage of women.
Yeah, and way fewer minorities.
Yeah, we're really blessed to have a diverse room. Which is great, because then we get jokes from all different perspectives.
Yes. And we have plenty of people around being like, don't say that.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so I've been having this problem where I'll do a bit and it'll work for a solid month, and then after that it just stops working. Like, what's up? Do you know about this?
Yes. I mean, obviously. Do you want me to draw you some crickets? Is that what you're asking?
But, we all know about, when you do it once and it works amazing the first time, but for a month. And then
now, in what context are you doing this bit? You mean you and your friends?
Stand-up.
You mean stand-up bit. Great. If you are doing a bit for how long?
Like a month?
Yeah, like a month.
It should month last longer than a month. But, hey, I think what might be happening is you're getting comfy and you're flexing it too much. You know what I mean? When you go, that's peanut butter for you. And everyone goes, oh, ha, ha, ha. And then the next time you do it, you go, well, if you ask me, oh, that's peanut butter, you know? And then you get diminishing returns.
It gets fatter and fatter.
Once I watched, what's that show called? Kinky Boots. I saw Kinky Boots and whoever was playing the lead role of the head drag queen lady. Oh, I don't remember anyone's name. But I had been in this role for forever. And I could tell because every time he opened his mouth, he went, oh, well, if you're talking to me like that, then we both see who's the baby here. And it just took so long. It was horrible. It was terrible. And in that buildup to the we can see who's the baby here, which he could have just said by himself, but he added all this buildup. And each little part in the buildup gets a tiny laugh. And none of it is good enough than what was written for him to say.
Yeah.
None of it's better than that. Maybe you're doing that.
Yeah. So much of comedy is tension and release, right? Mm-hmm. Like you withhold the laugh until you give them the punchline and then they release. But if you're giving them ways to release along the way, they've got nothing left when you get to your punchline.
Yeah.
So maybe you need to feel more uncomfortable as you're building it up. But
what do I know?
But this is part of the process, though.
Yeah.
This is it. This is exactly what we're talking about. This is how you should be feeling.
Yeah.
Good job.
Thank you. quick numbers question, how many sketches were you writing before you got on shows, and how many jokes were you writing, and what goals did you have for yourself?
We all were, well, I used to
perform. So I was on main stage at Second City, and we wrote, you know, every show we did, we wrote. And then I did Boom Chicago, and every show we did, we wrote. Then I lived in L.A. I went there to die. And I wrote in a sketch group. So, you know, I was always, always, always writing sketches. And by the time I got Late Night Seth, I could have never wrote another sketch again and just pitched old. I had so many sketches that no one wanted, but they
yeah.
existed.
I've always had jobs where I had, like, things I had to turn in and goals I had to meet. But I think that also, like, in the in-between spaces where I didn't have jobs, like, and the thing that I will often tell people who aren't don't have a currently have a writing job, if you can set goals for yourself to meet in the interim, whether that's that you get together with friends and make a writing group mm-hmm. and you hold yourselves accountable and
yes.
you're like, okay, every Sunday we're going to brunch and bring one sketch.
Yeah.
Or if you're like, great, every Friday I'm going to send you 10 monologue jokes. But if you can keep yourself working those muscles and going to that gym, you know what I mean? Like, where it's like kind of like working a muscle. If you can keep yourself doing that, then you'll be ready when you have an opportunity to apply for something or when you yeah. get a job, those muscles will be work, will be strong.
Will be sexy.
Oh, strong. yeah. Great question, though. Thank you. Back here? This gentleman with the...
Yes.
Oh, sorry. Oh, I'm
yes.
sorry. Whoever's next. Yes, I'm Wait. So sorry. I'm sorry.
So I have a compliment and a question.
well, we will...
Sure. So, Amber, I just want to say that happy birthday, Mr. Duvet from Detroiters is one of my very favorite things on the face of this earth.
Oh, thank you.
It's just,
yay.
It stays funny every time I watch it, and I make everybody watch it.
Oh, thank you.
So my question, also being somebody who has started in stand-up and writes jokes, and I get the idea of needing to fail to kind of make it work, but how do you both balance that with the tension of the idea that if you fail too big, you don't get other chances in the way that isn't necessarily true for people who aren't underrepresented?
I mean, sure, but ain't nobody gonna fire us from this job. I mean, you know what I mean? It's just us and our friends hanging around, and we're never too crazy, you know what I mean? So we're no longer in danger of that. But no, I understand what you were saying. I there was certainly a time when we had to watch our mouths and
But you probably know how to read that better than anyone. Like, I think you probably know how big the risks are to take, and you know what I mean? Like, I think you're probably more adept at reading that room.
To an extent, yeah.
Yeah. And I think at some point, you also just have to run those risks, because if you go up, everybody has a bad night, and if you go up and have one bad stand-up set, and someone's never going to book you again because of that, then that person
it's
sucks.
It's never going to happen.
It's never, That's yeah, A, it's never going to happen,
it's
but also, then
happen.
That person sucks, and don't go play that room anymore, and don't do that person's show anymore, and go do some other show where you're allowed to do what every other comic is allowed to do, which is fail sometimes and be good sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, I'd rather you take the risks and every once in a while burn a bridge than not take the risks.
It's definitely worth it. Okay. Because even if you burned all of your bridges, then at the end, people will go, oh, man, what we need is, like, a really edgy, young black female. And they'll be like, we know exactly who to call. But that is, you never get hired by being anything other than you exactly who you are. And you have to do that.
Don't be like a watered-down safe version of you. Mm-hmm. Be you all the way, and you'll find your home.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Can I? I really love MC Glamour. that bit about it.
Thank
Would you.
You
mind doing a little bit of it?
No, I'm not going to do a little bit of MC Glamour. Also, I don't remember what it was.
That's a deep cut.
That's a deep cut.
I think it was probably the first thing that I saw of you, and it's been a favorite of mine.
Thank you. It's really when nice. I felt my most beautiful. I'm only kidding a teeny bit.
I love it.
Oh, thank you. Hey, who's way back there?
Yeah, let's get somebody in the back.
Someone let this child put her hand down. How did Jokes Seth Can't Tell come about?
Yeah, how did that evolve?
Jenny came into, I guess the room with that idea and told me about it. And I was like, great, I think that's a great idea. I didn't really.
Amber's a good friend, and she'll lie a little bit to make you feel good.
Yeah, I mean, but you win. You have to do it. You have to try. Also, I clearly don't know anything. So we culled together our favorite rejected jokes, just like this.
Yeah.
And
that specifically were about, like, black news items or about gay stuff.
Yeah. And Seth was the one. At the end of this bit we do a bit where we do jokes that Seth can't tell. And mine are about being black, and Jenny's are about being gay and Puerto Rican and women and stuff. And at the end, Seth always goes, it's true, what my grandfather always said or something like that. black women and lesbians are liars. And we laughed so hard. I laughed so hard at the fact they said that I could have died because you could never say that on television.
Yeah, he did it at a rehearsal. He just improvised this line.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the sketch, then we goad him into telling one, and then he tells one, and it goes terribly, and we get mad at him. Because he's like, I think it's going to go badly. And we're like, no, it's going to be fine.
No, do it, do it.
And then he
do
tells
it.
Like a black joke or something, and it's horrifying. And then, yeah, then the first time we rehearsed in front of a rehearsal audience, he yelled, black women and lesbians are liars. And yeah, we did. We laughed because we're like,
so
what
funny.
An inappropriate thing that will never make it to air.
You'll never say that again. And then when he said it, we're like, Oh, it's fine. Oh, you guys are fine. Great, we're fine.
So now that closes every time. We've done that over 25 times. It makes me laugh so hard.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's how we came up with it, is we just pitched it. And then we thought, you know, let's see. And they chose it. And we pitched it as a one-off, just to do it one time.
Yeah.
And we had so much fun that they were like, well, what if we try to do this a few more times? And so it's been such a delight.
Who has the last and therefore automatically best question?
Oh,
Yeah, the pressure's on.
All right, plaid man, what you got?
Everyone, best question you've ever heard is coming. Hold on to your butts. Here comes.
I'm curious about writing for Seth and for, you know, somebody else's voice versus your own voices and what you have to do to kind of, especially when you were starting out, what you had to do to sort of figure out what's a Seth joke and what's something I'm going to do in a bit on my own and something like that.
No, that's a great question.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I think that for me, that might be the best question I've ever heard.
I'm sorry. I have to agree.
Yeah.
That's a good ask.
I feel
question.
Like it's two. You're almost like two separate things. I think that my primary job, first and foremost, is to write for Seth Meyers. Like, it's his show, and that's what I was hired to do. So when I go in, I mean, I feel like because we are on camera, it might seem like we just write for ourselves, but 99% of my day is always spent writing for Seth. And I think that writing for a late night show, the real key to figuring out how to do it is to find out where do your voice and the host's voice intersect.
Yeah.
Because I think if the host could think of everything, then they wouldn't need you. And so I think what they need is somebody who can write stuff for them. And I think one of the advantages of having a diverse writer's room is you've got a bunch of different writers who might see the news differently or might read different news stories. Like I'm a gay Puerto Rican woman. I'm going to probably, when I'm skimming the New York Times, probably going to stop at different articles than a straight white dude would.
I've only ever read The Root.
So we're probably seeing different news items, or we're seeing the same news items, but seeing them in a different way. And so I've got to figure out, okay, this is my reaction to the news, and this is what I want to say about the news, or what I think is important about this news story, but what is the appropriate intersection for that with Seth's voice? And so I think that's really the magic to being a late night writer, is figuring out where does your point of view intersect with the host's point of view, and writing it in a way that they can say it. And then when we're writing for ourselves, I think that's a whole different thing. That might be when I'm having a reaction to something that's so specific to me and who I am, that then I decide to write it for myself.
And it takes a long time because our voices do overlap. Like, I am Doofus Magoofus, and there is a thick overlap between me and Seth. Seth is a crazy person.
Mm-hmm.
Seth is very doofy, mm-hmm. and you would never see it, but it is there. So every once in a while, he would love to tell a gobbledygooby flooby joke. And that's really what he hires you for. You're hired to be the place where the two of you meet. And you know, one of us, Ben Warhite, is a stone cold insane person. You know, and everything he pitches is crazy.
Like, he's 100% goofball.
Yeah,
but it's great.
Yeah, it's very goofy. But it's something that Seth craves, and he has to have it. But you would never think that looking at Seth or talking to Seth or looking at any of the things he's done.
Does that answer your question?
Good question.
Excellent question.
Everyone, give it up
for
his question.
That question. Yeah, and give it up for yourselves for coming out. Thank you guys so much. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. Have a great South by Southwest.
Bye, we love you.
Amber Ruffin and Jenny Haig, everybody. Give it up one more time for them.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night podcast wherever they get their podcasts. We'll be right back.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.